Talk given Sunday, 10th of March, 1974. Let us make this a sort of an extended meditation meeting today. So let the body be perfectly at ease. Let all strains release. Pelvis, abdominal region, and the neck, lower jaw relaxed. And the muscles around the eyes and let the sense of ease permeate the whole body. Let your own natural breath rhythm, which is your particular life rhythm, be established. And let the mind also be restful. Quietly, but as intensely as is convenient, let the mind feel rather than see. Let the mind feel that what we call the ease of the body means that this organism is in tune with the universal rhythm. In this ease, one is truly at home in the body, which is commonly seen as one's own body, and also with the body which is the totality itself. We talk of the manifested world as a cosmos. Cosmos formed out of chaos. And chaos is not to be understood in its modern sense of disorder, but of that primordial condition which was the quiescent condition. And then movement starts up, and that movement proves itself to be a wonderful rhythm of activity which brings about the formation of all the different bodies that constitute the cosmos, a movement and a state of being in which order is inherent, not lawlessness or disorder. That is the significance of that word cosmos. And the body is a miniature cosmos. The cosmos is at ease. If one can sense the cosmos in any deep measure. And so the body too, this miniature cosmos, when it remains at ease, is your own home here. Let this peace pervade the entire organism, which is a psychophysical organism. Your breath rhythm, your life rhythm throbs through it. And if we are poised and at ease, we can really see for ourselves that every state of strain in the body betokens a corresponding state of strain in the mind, in the psyche. If one is intelligent, in the practice of the discipline of the body, and all this, of course, comes under one great word, yoga. If one is intelligent with the discipline of the body, then as one trains the body, to arrive at its natural condition, its perfect condition, one must pay attention also to all those aspects of the mind which are related to the different parts and aspects of the body and its activities. This is a very deep and a profound thing. One begins to see it as one enters into yoga seriously with great intelligence. You may recall that on past occasions we have seen that the bodily discipline has one fundamentally important object, namely, not to be a disturbance to the person in meditation, and that all the meditative aspects are by far the real important part of yoga. And you will also recollect that in the teachings of yoga, the preliminary purification in terms of the moralities and the religious observances, to use a Christian phrase, the instruments of grace, as they are called, all those have to be observed, mindfully observed. Then comes the discipline of the vehicle, the body, which is a sort of an anchor, if you like, or if you like, the soil or the ground in which the seed of the spirit is planted and comes to fruition. And the coming to fruition of that spirit is in terms of the mind growing to maturity, complete maturity. The phenomenon of the person with a mature mind is extremely rare, right through the millennia. Very, very rarely one comes across such a being. And one of the outstanding characteristics of such a being is that he is always at ease, whatever the external situation may be, the turmoil, the brutal nature of the ordinary process of life under terrific pressures, especially in the great cities of the world. This man is always at his ease, inwardly. An ease so great, so intense, so pure, that, as in the story of the Buddha and the elephant that was let loose upon him to destroy him, the wild elephant is tamed. Who is this wild elephant? Is he not our own desire nature, fevered, violent, mad, like the ox in the ox herding pictures? This perhaps is the meaning of the mad elephant. And he is given liquor which makes him violent and mad. What are these spirituous liquors and fumes which make us human beings mad, ill at ease? Is it not all our ununderstood whims, passions, desires, and so on, our biases, prejudices, our preconceptions, our assumptions, our violent clinging to our basic misconception of ourselves as separate egos, unrelated to the rest of the cosmos, and therefore always out of harmony with it. And in this state of disharmony, how impossible it becomes to live the holy life, to be serious-minded, religious, and thereby prevent the flowering of that which is our supremely distinguishing characteristic, namely the religiousness within our own being. Let us try and feel this intensely. Feel it calmly, letting the body, the psychophysical organism, be at peace, free of tensions and strains. Let this feeling help us, enable us, in fact, to overleap, to transcend mere intellectual comprehension. Intellectual comprehension is limited to our state in which discriminative consciousness, vijnana, is overlord. And the very meaning of discriminative consciousness is that self-consciousness as the experiencing subject prevails and keeps everything else at a distance from oneself. How futile then to try to seek nirvana or the kingdom of heaven or peace or communion. If we do not see these things, it is impossible to live by that teaching of the Buddha, Samasati, perfect mindfulness, and Samasamadhi, perfect communion. The word concentration is a somewhat restrictive term in this context. Samadhi does not mean concentration in our modern sense of the word, in our modern languages. Sang Adhi. Adhi is the topmost, sung together with. It is the state of complete togetherness. And that means, as we have tried to see today, that oneself, at home in the body, is at home in the cosmos, in complete tune with it. This is the state of communion. So, samasati, sama samadhi. Sama means perfect. It also means right, correct, in the ordinary dictionary sense of the word. But in the religious context, which is the context of transcendence, that meaning, right, is not good enough. The word perfect, perhaps, is a better word to use. And by the same token, discriminative consciousness nullifies any effort to carry out that marvelous teaching of Jesus when he said very simply, watch and pray. The watch, the mindfulness, is the samasati, and the pray, this contemplative prayer, is the state of communion with that unknown and unknowable ultimate reality, which is the meaning of the word truth in the religious context. Infinite and therefore indefinable. Such is the task, so to say. Let us not regard it as a task. It's not imposed upon us. The process of life by which man comes to fruition has a power, an energy inherent in his very being, which moves him to that state of perfection. And in that state of perfection, there is the complete at-one-ment in awareness with total being. There is total and complete attentiveness in terms of the oneness, and it is this which makes it so difficult to understand. And there is bliss. The peace that passes understanding. The bliss which has nothing to do with sensation, with delight, with pleasure. And it is this sort of thing which is the sum and substance, the deep meaning, transcending mere intellectual comprehension of yoga or of the religious life or of the true fruition and fulfillment of man. Remember the meaning of the word human. The happy creator from its Sanskrit roots. The creator and the creativeness is completely associated with mind. Not the mind which we call mind, namely the process of discursive thought, which is merely mental chatter. It's silent speech, that is all. But that unknown, immeasurable something which is an energy quite outside our control. No one ever arrives at the state or is in the state of controlling that energy. That energy controls us. But the mystery and the marvel of that energy is that it never imposes itself. It doesn't attempt to force us, to compel us, because that energy is action in eternity. It is not in a hurry. It does not have anything to do with time. So, that energy works in us in a way so mysterious that we cannot understand its workings in the sense of understanding the rationale of any particular operation. But it works, because when we allow it to work, we see the fruit as the consequence of that working. And the fruit is the one who is at ease, the one who is truly happy. Go right back now to the beginning. The body is poised, is free of strain. It is at ease. This state of ease is the meaning of happiness. There is no disturbance. The life rhythm goes on. There is change and growth in the direction of the fulfillment of the purpose of our existence. That we can be aware of. Now, this state of ease, this state of deep, profound, quiet awareness of the action which is fulfillment, is the real meaning of the happy state. There is no disturbance. There is nothing which is possessed, nothing which is attained or achieved. It works through oneself. One is just the instrument. The willing, cooperative instrument, the little life through which the big life, the total life, works. You see, this implies the state of selflessness. That alone is the happy state. Therefore, it will be desireless. All desire, conscious desire, of necessity is self-oriented. It starts from the self and it draws unto the self. So desirelessness is that happy state. Contrast this happy state, this true happiness, with pleasure. keep the body quiet and easy, because only from the state of transcendence that you may realize here and now, it is only from that state that you can truly see, you can have the true vision of the meaning of pleasure, its origin, and its progress. Its progress being a trail of destruction, of sorrow, of ill-doing, of the ill state which, as the Buddha pointed out in his Paticca-samuppada, the teaching of the 12 factors which constitute the origin and uprising of ill, ends in jara marana, decrepitude, destructive dissolution, death, which is attended with sorrow and loss and lamentation and grief and misery and so on. And its root lies in our unintelligent pursuit of pleasure. There are those who say that if we are young, naturally we must have plenty of pleasure. Of course, pleasure will come in the course of our daily life. Just as much, of course, pain and frustration will come. But there is something which differentiates very clearly pleasure as we, in this mad world of ours and in our ill state, pursue, and the pleasure which is the gift of God, of transcendence itself, through the medium of the cosmos, of nature. When the body is at ease and healthy, is there not a peculiar, calm sense of pleasure which is a right expression in material terms, in terms of time and mortality, of that transcendent eternal happiness which is the ultimate truth of our existence? Is there not pleasure in hearing the song of the bird? Hear the sound of the stream as it goes past. The beauty of trees and forests, of grains of sand, the seashore, the waves, of a sunset, and of the wonder of starlit nights, when, if you are quiet, the distance between your eyes and the stars seems to be annihilated by the sheer dark in which those stars shine. Is there not pleasure there, if you like? And here pleasure has its true meaning. The passing happiness. Here pleasure does not bind. Pleasure does not thwart the purpose of life. This is quite a different sort of pleasure. And there comes the pleasure which is natural to youth, the pleasure of love. The love which is not mad passion, producing problems, neuroses, psychoses, and awful misery in the world. But the love that springs up and works itself out, somewhat like the way in which Shakespeare represents it in The Tempest, when he presents the uprising and the progress of love between Miranda and Ferdinand. Read that carefully. Brood over it. And see that love is not a madness. But the formal expressions of love are passing expressions in our life. They must inevitably pass. And if we are intelligent, we let them pass. We do not hanker after them. We do not experience a fevered longing for them, but we see and we know, and even when we are young it is possible to see and know this, that these are the passing expressions of that supreme love which is constitutive of our very being, and it is this which is trying to come to flower. So there is that pleasure. And there are so many other pleasures, which are normal, natural pleasures. But this pleasure which is destructive and which plagues mankind through the centuries, and perhaps today we are at one of the worst stages in which it has descended into depths as man has not known for a long time. The pleasures which are sensational delight, the flinging aside of all understanding of the self and right action of righteous, simple, beautiful living, of the destruction of morality. And therefore, the very source because of which we receive the wages of sin, death, which is destruction, not consummation and fulfillment. For death, which is consummation and fulfillment, is the portal into the infinite, into eternity. Whereas death, which is the destruction, which is our wages for our sins, is simply a wiping out of that which proved itself worthless in the universal process. Look for a moment into the origin of this pleasure, this ill pleasure, this destructive pleasure. Where does it start. It starts with the sense impressions, does it not? The sense impressions have this pleasure-pain mechanism without which the body could not survive. It is just a mechanism. The body takes it in its stride, in actual fact, and uses that mechanism rightly. Where the thing goes wrong is with the psyche. One records the feelings of pleasure, the feelings of pain. And the psyche says, I like this, and I want more of it, and I get attached to it. And the psyche also says, I dislike that. I have an aversion for it. And I try to get rid of it or to destroy it. But there is the conflict, an everlasting conflict set up by virtue of the natural, healthy mechanism, the pleasure-pain mechanism of the body itself. And in the course of our growing up from childhood, we form rigid concepts about all this. We are conditioned in so many ways. And we are caught up in this conditioning, and we never try to understand, really to understand what it all means and whither it is moving us. So we become like that mad elephant. But if, perchance, I, the mad elephant, can hear the word spoken by wisdom, by the incarnate wisdom, and remember that the incarnate wisdom is within myself, within yourself. Look within, thou art Buddha. If I can hear that word, if I can truly listen to it, then there is salvation. Once again, one moves into the happy state. In our everyday life, we do not function as people who are awake to the fact that we are living beings and what it means to be a living being. Our mind is filled with confusion, with a fog, an impenetrable fog of concepts, beliefs, ideas, images all, and not the reality. Reality for us in our condition is rightly called emptiness. When the mind is empty of all these images, then the eternal fullness of the mind, which is truth, which is creative energy and power, which is cosmos producer, begins to function without hindrance from me. This is the important thing. But as long as there are these images, this state of confusion, this state of evil inside, then there can be no possibility of communion, no possibility of being healthy in mind, mature in mind, freed, empty of all the clutter, all the foolishness, the destructive foolishness and delusion with which I am plagued. But caste, work, if I work my way through it and really see it, then every time I look at something, whether it be an object or a flower or a person or a situation or some intellectual or artistic something which I see, every time I see it, I look at it, I see it in the state of perfect love, in the state of perfect wisdom. And then I understand it because the clutter in my mind is out. This is the meaning of understanding. This is the understanding which transcends intellectual comprehension. This is the understanding which made, I believe, Solomon, wasn't it, who said, "Give me understanding, O Lord, and I will keep thy statutes unto the end." Keep thy statutes. As the Rig Veda put it, Ritta, which is observed. Ritta is the eternal order of the universe. Inherent in every particular thing in the universe. That is Ritta. That is the meaning of the word righteousness. Our word right, righteousness and so forth are all derived from that. What a wonderful thing religion is. If only we are clean and pure. And therefore, this understanding is wise compassion. It is compassionate wisdom. And that is the happy state. The state in which we are free from the tyranny of pleasure, of the wrong sort of mad pleasure seeking. This is the happy state in which we are truly human.